is a lie. It hides the truth. Beyond the neon lights lurk dark shadows that feed on those that stray too close. In the heart of Tokyo walk creatures never mentioned in the guidebooks. Creatures that need the blood of the living. From Shinjuku to Shibuya, the undead are the hidden power that control this city. Learn the hidden truth in this narrative podcast by independent author Brent Thomas. Learn the hidden truth of Bloody Tokyo. Chapter 14. Shinjuku Station is the largest hub of transportation in the world. Its web of passageways are lined with vendors selling anything from greeting cards to snack foods to high-end designer clothing. Just in the station proper, there are 36 train platforms. Stations that are accessible just from Shinjuku Station's underground are included. That number jumps to 51. There are over 200 exits to the station, which is necessary to allow access to the over 2.5 million travelers that use the station on an average day. The saying used to be that Shinjuku Station is larger than most airports. However, that comparison no longer accurately describes the size and bustle of Shinjuku Station. Slowly, the comparison is becoming that it is larger than most cities. This might not be true, but it certainly feels true, especially when you are a tourist lost in the depths of the station. Every turn introduces you to another endless corridor of shops and commerce. You follow the signs for the numbered exit you are searching for, only to have that number suddenly disappear. Doubling back, and it seems the entire layout has changed, with shops that you didn't notice on the first pass now shouting out the surrounding stores. And shouting does often mean shouting. Store clerks loudly greet every potential patron who drifts within range. Other clerks, often carrying the same type of projection cones used by cheerleaders at pep rallies, bark out their time sales in efforts to attract the necessary sales and commerce so that they can continue to occupy such prime real estate. Those who have grown up using the station, the noise and the bustle are blocked out almost to the point of non-existence, being just more everyday scenery not worth noticing. Those not used to the action, it can be deafening and visually overwhelming. Many have given up the search for their proper exits to this underground labyrinth and instead decide to take their chances in the outside world. Some of these exits lead to sweet air at the edge of beautiful parks. Other exits lead to even more chaos, as stores are no longer limited by only one story. Above ground, layer upon layer of businesses compete with each other and use any trick they can to lure in customers. Lights flash in an almost epileptic fury. The sound cones give way to loudspeakers. Men with silken skin and perfect smiles hold brochures for karaoke boxes. Women in colorful maid outfits that are, of course, of the very short-skirted variety, pass out packets of tissue that advertise game centers. And if you stumble too close to Kabukicho, you might be approached by another brand of tout, one carrying a three-ring binder full of Polaroids of girls you can only hope are legally old enough to be declared women. And while these particular touts might have limited English, they all know the words necessary to tout their wares. Blowjob, 5,000 yen. Depending on the tourists, this might be a reason to avoid the unknown streets in Shinjuku, or the very reason they seek them out. Here, very little is truly off-limits or surprising. If anything surprises, it would be that it is also possible to walk less than 5 minutes in any direction and be in an entirely different environment. Gone could be the dizzyingly tall buildings with their flashing lights. Gone are the competing touts with their gifts and loud voices and binders. Gone are the crowds. Replacing them are narrow streets lined with carefully loved buildings that represent life in this city. The very air is different. Gone is the scent of too many people, replaced by the closest thing a city this large has to fresh air. In addition, there is a quiet that settles over the streets. Families live here. Families that struggle to get their children to finish their homework and keep the laundry clean. The only noise comes from the clusters of neighbors who meet on the streets and go over the new gossip since the last time they met. They share stories and laughter, seemingly unaware of the ongoing chaos just a few blocks over. But they are aware. They just know that slice of the city operates under different rules. It is separate from them, and being separate, it gives them little cause for concern. After all, they have worries of their own to fixate on. And so, the old man sitting on the curb merited little notice. His face had the resting grim expression of so many men of his age. He was thin, but looked healthy, despite being a shade too pale. And he was clean. If he'd had that telltale layer of grime about him, there would have been suspicions of him being homeless, and that would have meant using methods to convince him to move along to a different neighborhood. But there was no concern of that here. This man obviously had a home. And when they looked closely, those who lived in the neighborhood realized it was a face that they had seen many times. It was someone's grandfather. They couldn't quite remember whose, but even that was normal. There were so many of the older generation these days. Too many, at least when compared to the amount of children around. So Koike sat on the corner unmolested, which was better for all involved. He was feeling ornery. Truth be told, he felt worried, which was what brought about the orneriness. He hadn't seen his friend for over a week, and while that in itself was not suspicious, there had been plenty of gossip amongst the dead. There had been rumors of some kind of retaliation going on. Or, some even whispered, some kind of assassination. Whatever it was, it had happened in Shinichi's realm. That this happened right after Shinichi started asking about making a child got Koike suspicious. Tokyo was a huge city with a dense enough population that a few more of the undead would probably not be noticed. But there were powers that be that like to make rules and lord their strength over others, and making decrees about what was necessary to sire a child was one of the ways these fat cats passed their time. Koike knew that Shinichi had talked with Yamagata, the fattest of the cats that made of the undead elites. Well, there was also Nishimura, Hoshino, and Mi-chan. Koike did not want to challenge any of those four with accusation. Hell, he didn't even want to go to them with suspicions. Koike might be an old man in body, but as a vampire he was still relatively young, being made himself only around 25 years ago. Koike grimaced. The last thing he wanted to go and do was seek out the advice of his maker. Their first 10 years together had been quite pleasant, but after that, they had a falling out. But it was through her that Koike had first met Shinichi, and it was possible that she knew more. And it wasn't like Koike had many others to turn to. Being an old man hadn't done him many favors, but it had at least meant he had little desire to get involved with the politics and power plays that many of the younger vampire crowd did when they were first made. Plays that often had left ripples through their undead lives. They wanted power and glory. Koike simply wanted to keep his patch clean and enjoy the quiet. But if something had happened to Shinichi, it was at least deserved to be looked into. He was the closest thing to a friend that Koike had, and it was the least a friend could do. And if that meant facing his maker, then Koike would do what he had to do. The wind changed direction, adding a cool breeze to his thoughts. and on the gusts, Koike could hear the noise and smell the chaos from blocks away. Tokyo was calling out to him. How fitting. /Brent Thomas, liking the Brent Thomas author page on Facebook, and by visiting deadlytroubadour.com.
Thanks to everyone for sticking around to this point in the show. It's that time where I like to take a few moments and give a shout out to all of those wonderful people who are supporting me over on patreon.com/Brent Thomas. That's the way where you can kind of just directly gift me a little tip in the jar and say, dude, keep up the good work. The patron I'm singling out for this time is Natalie. We actually met each other in an interesting way because she inherited the apartment I lived in Japan after I moved to a different place. So we've known each other for a while now, and she's an incredibly great person who is generously donating some of her scratch. If you're over on Patreon, you've also seen that I've started putting the transcripts of the show on, and she's also the person you can thank for that, because she was like, man, I don't really like podcasts, to be honest. I like reading. And I said, well, hey, I like writing. So there you go. So if you are a patron there and enjoying the transcripts or just want to read transcripts before anything else is published, Natalie's who you got to thank for that. So yeah, thanks to her, and really just thanks to everyone who is willing to support me there. It means a lot, and it takes, you know, it takes time to get this done. And just having that little bit of a way of knowing people appreciate it, even if it's just $1 a month, really means a lot to encourage me to just keep at the old grindstone. In this case, the grindstone, in fact, being a keyboard and a microphone. Thank you, Natalie.